Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazorra, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 13, Episode 127. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazorra, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Monday, Steelers Nation. Dave, how are you doing? How was your weekend?
It was very entertaining, yes. Got to watch some lopsided hockey games and got to watch the Pirates continue their just when they reel me back in, and then they drop what, 7 in a row now, I think they're at. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe you need to pull a reverse jinx here. Wasn't it last year that you went and they never would win or wouldn't even score right. Any runs when you went? Maybe you'll have the reverse effect on them this time. But yeah, look, I mean, here we are past the draft now, and it's funny how the NFL keeps the calendar moving. And you know, this week, I think, you know, the initial report is on the 11th, which I think is what, Thursday, mm-hmm. when the NFL regular season schedule's supposed to drop. I know Peter King wonders if that's going to happen on time, but I would imagine that the NFL is not going to miss an opportunity to have a day this week to, you know, have all eyes on them. So it will be interesting to see if indeed that happens, and you know, specifically the order of this, you know, the Steelers' schedule. We've known who they're going to play for, obviously, since the 2022 season ended. But there's something magical that happens when you start putting all that order together there. So we'll see.
Yeah, not my favorite time of year, but the NFL calendar never sleeps. And so we'll assume it'll happen on Thursday, and leaks generally start to come out, you know, the day before and throughout that Thursday afternoon before the actual release is announced in the evening. So we'll keep you busy and informed about the schedule news here.
Hey, real quick, if you have to throw a dart right now as to who and where they will open up against. I mean, look, I mean, that streak's got to come to an end finally, right? About week one at home. I think right. We said this last year, but.
Well, the Pirates are going to be on the road around that right. time, right? So that was a thought. Maybe this year right. will finally be the year.
So my bet is they'll open at home in week one. I'm willing to bet you're willing to go that way as well too. Who do you think they will open at home against? Who would be your best guess right now?
How often do they open up against a divisional opponent? The Browns occasionally.
Yeah, not terribly often. And obviously last year they opened up against the Bengals, right?
I'll say it's a home opener against Cleveland. They've done that a couple times with Watson first, you know, full season in Cleveland. I'll say at home against the Browns.
I will say at home against the Titans.
Any particular reason for Tennessee?
Yeah, because, well, here's what I did. I said, okay, there's no logic.
You spent way too much time on this, I can already tell.
there's no logical reason to this. I said, okay, let's throw out all the AFC North teams by chance that they don't want them opening up in division. Let's throw out all the west of the Mississippi teams. And no real reason other than just they don't want those guys to come east first week. So I eliminated by no real reason, a process of elimination, the Ravens, the Bengals, the Browns, the Cardinals, the Packers, and San Francisco. So that left me with the Jaguars, 49ers, and the Titans. Well, if you look back, I think the last couple of years, I think the Jaguars and Patriots have opened up on the road. So I'm going to let them stay at home. Whereas I think the Titans the last couple of years have opened at home. So playing that meaningless game, I came away with the Titans.
All right, I'll stand by my statement. You spent too much time
thinking
about that one. Yeah, but good. We'll see. I mean, they opened up against Tennessee years ago. It was like that 1911 game. Was that
the Pouncey injury one or no?
Was it? I can't remember. I just know there was an opener. I mean, they had the, you know, how was that week two? I'm stumbling right now, so I'm not quite sure. But okay, I'll go with you on the Titans. I get that.
Okay. I that would make for a pretty interesting matchup as well, too, I think, wouldn't it?
They don't usually do NFC games to start seasons, correct? Usually you don't get that conference crossover. Because I was thinking Green Bay would be interesting, the start of the Jordan Love era against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that would be interesting as well, too.
I mean, I guess they played the Giants in an opener in 2020, so right. I suppose it's possible. But I'll say either Green Bay or Cleveland, but who the heck knows?
Okay.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, we effectively killed 8 minutes of time there.
In our podcast about nothing, off to a good start. Andy Weidel speaking on Friday. The perk of having the assistant GM is that you get to hear from him post-draft as well. And so Andy Weidel talking to the media, and I think we all needed a cold shower after the quote of, we will impose our will on other teams. Getting back to that bully ball mentality, very much in lockstep with the Pittsburgh team of adding big physical people, both O-line, D-line, and at corner as well. And so Andy Weidel very much on board with the direction this team is headed.
Yeah, it was hard not to get a little excited after watching him talk. He says, what are your kind of guys? He says, our kind of guys? He says, Steelers, physical, tough, love football, high character guys, high football character players, guys that are resilient, they can handle it. They can come back from a setback, and they just have fortitude. They're strong-willed. They're tough-minded players and people. And I think the quote you went after there, I'm trying to find it here, about the will, the exact quote. Do you have that? Let's see.
Yeah, we want to be able to impose our will on teams. That's the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? You go break the other team's sword in the second half of a game. Go be able to win on the road. That's what we're building. That's what we have here. That's what they've been in the past. And we want to continue that identity, end quote.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, go break some swords. Exactly. Yeah, look, I mean, You go back through this offseason here, and you kind of see the direction that this team has gone, starting in free agency and getting those big guys up front, and not only on offense but on the defensive side of football with, you know, guys like Fajoko and Watts. You know, you kind of bigger physical guys, and then you fast forward into the draft and what they've done here. And yeah, look, I mean, I think everybody, and we've said all along, you know, or most of the offseason here, we, with the direction this team is going, we expect this team to come out on the offense and just try to, you know, you would think first and foremost, try to establish that run and bludgeon people and kind of let the passing game work off of that moving forward here. So, yeah, I really think this is set up and has gone the way that they've kind of planned it out to go. And now we'll, of course, have to wait and see if you know, it was the right way. And if they're able to pull it off that way, because second year quarterback, and you would think that you want to surround him with as good a running game as possible. And the kind of running game that we talk about, you run good early so you can run. So you have the opportunity to run great late in games, and hopefully we'll be able to see this. And I think, you know, Andy Weidel's message coming out of that press conference was pretty clear on that.
Yeah. And again, I think it just echoes the same sentiment shared and expressed by Omar Khan, by Mike Tomlin, and just by the moves that Pittsburgh has made both in the offseason and free agency and throughout the draft. And so what I like about the 2023 Steelers compared to the 2022 Steelers is, you know, they're still in a bit of a transition, but they have a plan. They knew who they want to be. 2022, they really did not know who they wanted to be, especially offensively, with obviously the, you know, turning of the page of the Ben era into Trubisky, Pickett. Weren't even 100% sure who your starting quarterback was, let alone what your offensive identity needed to be, wanted to be. That's a totally different story in 2023. Pickett is the guy. He is the franchise. He has the keys, and they know who they want to be, how they want to win offensively. They don't have to go through the painful process of trying to discover that throughout the season as they did pre-bye week of 2022.
Well, how many times did we say that last year? You know, what is the identity of this offense? And
even the players said it, right? Like, we don't know who we are. Yeah.
But you get past that bye week, and at least it sort of started to take shape there. And, you know, they obviously bounced back and won some games. But I think they looked at the roster and said, you know, that who we want to be, we don't have all the right pieces to be that. So let's go out and make it a priority during the offseason to get pieces of and just goes back to show you that, you know, some of those pieces came from Philadelphia, or had Philadelphia roots to it. And there's nothing wrong with that, especially look at what the Eagles have managed to accomplish the last couple seasons here. So look, the pieces are here now. So, you know, don't tell me about the labor pains anymore. Show me the baby at this point. So now it's up to them to get this thing done. And obviously, you know, the first stage of that will be rookie minicamp coming up this next weekend. That should be interesting from several levels to see where some guys line up at, and, you know, just, you know, the first of many offseason practices to go here.
And you really felt this Andy Weidel influence throughout the offseason, the way that the Eagles, as you just referenced, built their team through the trenches, having a really strong ground game. Obviously, the offense and the quarterbacks built a little bit differently, but that was the principle, that was the core. And even just his overall background, being an offensive lineman in college at Villanova, playing guard, being in the NFL, his first ever draft class, the Steelers' first pick in 1998 was Alan Faneca, you know, Hall of Fame guard. And so, you know, I think just based on the moves that Pittsburgh has made, they've really looked at what Weidel and Eagles built and have tried to model that in Pittsburgh. And will it work? You know, we'll have to wait and see. But I like the direction this team is going.
Yeah. Once again, I mean, I don't think you can fault the overall theory and you know, direction and the moves that they've made so far, and obviously coming out of the draft, and, you know, that had a big physical theme to it as well too. They don't, you know, they're not going to be bullied. They want to be the bully. Mm-hmm. Now at this point, you had a good article about, you know, expect bully ball, you know, moving forward into 2023 here. I what else about Andy kind of got you excited? What did you think about the Wisconsin connection?
Yeah. With the coach there, Chris, Hearing, I'm not sure on the pronunciation there, but Weidel had said that, you know, he had a connection there with Wisconsin because Hearing was the longtime Mount Lebanon head coach, which is where Weidel grew up, where his kids went to school. I believe they were coached by Hearing. Now, he's no longer with Wisconsin. He just left after the 2022 season. But of course, throughout this past year, throughout the fall, Weidel said he kind of leaned on him to get insight on guys like Keanu Benton and Nick Herbig. And so obviously Pittsburgh was drafting Wisconsin guys before this class with Isaiah Lattimore, with TJ Watt, et cetera. But Weidel, you know, having that connection there gives you that extra insight that maybe some other teams didn't quite have to that level. knowing somebody on the inside.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that you know, look, you go back to the Senior Bowl, right? And didn't Keanu Benton say something to the line of, you know, what was his phrasing that he used?
Yeah, Benton told us that the Steelers told him that he was on their radar. On their radar was the quote.
Now, some will say, I wonder how many, you know, players would say something like that, but it stuck out at the time, you know?
Sure, for us, at least kind of diving into the draft process, obviously, right. Benton was watched throughout the year, and I believe Wide Reference going to one of those games, and I'm sure they had other scouts there throughout the year on practices and on Saturday, so you know, it's not like they first discovered Keanu Benton at the Senior Bowl, far from it, but you know, all those things layer in terms of watching him there, seeing him there, having the inside connection with one of the coaches, you know, watching him, you know, play, watching the All-22. You put those all things together and that creates the profile and the report on the player that makes you feel really comfortable with the guy. And again, I think just projecting Wisconsin defensive players to Pittsburgh scheme, because there's so much overlap being odd fronts, having similar philosophies in terms of run stunts and blitzes and the calls that they make, makes that projection a bit easier in a still otherwise muddy and difficult process to project. Anytime you can make that a bit cleaner, you're pretty intrigued by it.
What did you think about his thoughts on Benton, based on, you know, kind of the struggles on tape against Ohio State, but how what they saw at the Senior Bowl with his pass rush ability and all like that really solidified it for him.
Yeah, I see that on tape. He's going to be a nose tackle to start, the Steelers said, but he's not just a run stuffer that's going to take on double teams and free up the linebackers. I think he can do that with better technique, but he's somebody that can rush the passer as well. I'll have a video Tuesday that kind of breaks down one trait I like about each of the seven Steelers draft picks. And with Benton, I said the quick hands, and I think the athletic profile for how big he is, how big that lower half is, some of the, you know, hip and ankle flexibility that he has in this game to corner and finish and rush the passer, combined with those active quick hands and string together moves, makes him more than just a pure run stuffing nose tackle that gives you pass rush value, that gives you sub package rotational value. And so I think you saw that in some of those 1v1 moments at the Senior Bowl to kind of just get a feel for, okay, this guy's a pass rusher, is quick off the football, and some of those more focused type drill. So yeah, I think it's a really good opportunity to watch those guys 1v1 against, you know, the top talent in this draft class. That's what the Senior Bowl certainly provides.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we pay a lot of attention to that. And we remind people annually, especially once you get past the first couple. How many underclassmen did they take past the second round?
That's a good question. Was Washington an underclassman? Did he declare?
I think he didn't. Because he wasn't at the Senior Bowl, was he?
Right. He wasn't at any of these.
I'm going to have to pull events up. But it's been a while since I've looked back at my master, because I make sure to notate in there on the
Okay. He did declare.
Combine.
But I don't know if that's one of those senior, because you got the super senior thing still that right. I have to be careful of. But I believe he was an underclassman. I think he was a 3-year guy at Georgia, maybe redshirt junior.
I have him listed as an underclassman for what is so.
Okay. I believe you.
For there, and let's see, cornerback, obviously.
Trice, I'm pretty sure, wasn't. And Anderson, I'm sure, right. Did not declare. So probably, and Herbig wasn't. So just Washington, okay. And Broderick Jones.
That's why, you know, going back to pay attention to those all-star games, right? You know, especially when you're trying to put your mock together and things related to that kind of stuff. All right, what did you think about, you know, we continue the they're continue to be asked about Herbig and whether or not he's an outside or inside guy, and they're keeping this pretty vanilla with him.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't anything new that Weidel added. He just kind of reiterated what Khan had said about, you know, he might play inside and outside. There's some flexibility there. So again, we'll get eyes, and hopefully maybe some reports will come out during the spring, but certainly once camp hits in late July, we'll be out there in person and can really chart and map those things out. So I imagine they're going to try to use him at both to kind of see where he fits best before maybe trying to peg him in one particular position.
All right. What else from Andy Weidel stick out to you?
Yeah, I thought his comments about, I want to get your take on the type of corners his team is looking for. We talk about the physicality, O-line, D-line, when the point of attack, but how about a quarterback getting those two big long corners and Joey Porter Jr. and Corey Trice Jr.? And he talked about, Weidel did, saying, quote, "We're aware of the other players that we have in our division, the receivers that we have to defend against. And I think with Corey and with Joey, speed and length can shrink the field of an offense, and these guys have speed and they have length." And so I think about, you know, Jamar Chase, I think about T. Higgins. How do you defend some of these big guys? And I think having that size and length and the ability to kind of leverage, you know, these guys and maybe push them to the sideline is going to help and just disrupt timing of routes. Because again, so much of the modern NFL passing game is based on, you know, timing and rhythm, and ball comes out in 2.5 seconds. And if they can't, you know, if the timing is thrown off by a good jam and a receiver who can't stem his route properly off the line, then that pass rush is going to get home that much more effectively. So you're seeing that type that, you know, Indianapolis has looked towards, Seattle has looked towards, those big long corners that hopefully can reroute at the line. And that's rush and coverage going together.
I'm fully on board with that. I don't think we're going to see a ton of cover three.
Yeah, probably a little bit. Not the old school Dick LeBeau fire zone.
Right. And look, Russian coverage does, you know, and I think you hit on something really good there. The more often you can disrupt, you know, the overall timing on the play, whether it be a jam and make a receiver have to dance a little bit more at the line of scrimmage to get off and get around, you know, press type situations, and give guys like T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith, you know, another 3/4 of a second maybe to impact, you know, the pocket. I think all that adds up. And look, you know, the other teams make plays too, right? And sure. But within that, you know, look, once again, this goes back to the identity I think this team wants to have. And I think they've made it very, very clear. They want to be the aggressor here. They want to play, you know, a level of bully ball on both sides of the football.
They do. And there's no question about that. And I think what's really attractive with Porter and Trice is, you don't see many corners in college that press at all, much less ones that can do it effectively. I think that's one reason why it's so tough to evaluate some of these college receivers, because they're playing in wide open spread systems. They're seeing off coverage and, you know, defenses that just don't want to get beat deep and give up the big explosive game changing play. And so most of these guys are used to clean releases, and most corners are playing, you know, bail coverage or off coverage or zone coverage, whatever it may be. And so to get corners that can press and press pretty effectively, I thought that they got two of the better ones in this class in Porter and Trice. Now, I think both those guys have things to work on. I think Porter's, you know, press man technique needs to be cleaned up still a little bit, but these guys are obviously comfortable and they want to be aggressive. They want to use their length and their size. And you don't see a lot of college corners that are comfortable doing that type of stuff. And so to get both of those guys, I think, is really intriguing watching their careers going forward.
Yeah, and you know, with a guy with Porter, obviously where he's drafted, you would expect him to get on the field sooner rather than later. And, you know, a lot of attention will be on throughout the rest of his offseason. Can he crack that lineup by week one and you know, be a starter on one side? Obviously the real wild card here, and it's quite a lottery ticket if it comes through for you, is a guy like Corey Trice Jr. I mean, there's obvious reasons why he, you know, fell as far as he did. You know, maybe it is medical problems. Maybe it is some teams maybe had him viewed as a potential move to safety type guy. But the Steelers have made it clear that they think he can be a cornerback and a cornerback in their system. And it just, your mind races to think. Imagine if they do hit on both of these guys, and right out of the chute at that. Now, obviously, you know, I think it would take a lot for a guy like Corey Trice to get on the field come week one. But, you know, what if through, you know, the natural materialization of a season, and how many times have we talked this offseason about, you know, what does the future hold at the cornerback position past this year, when you talk about guys under contract, right? Levi Wallace, Akella Witherspoon, Arthur Millette, James Pierre, all those guys, their contracts in, you know, assuming they all were to make the 53-man roster this year. There's no guarantee that happens, but they all their contracts are up after this year. What does the future of the secondary look like past 2023? And within that, you know, obviously the hope is that you know, Porter gets into the starting lineup sooner rather than later. And what if, I mean, it's a huge what if, but what if Trice can as well too, and be that mid-round talent that you got for a steal in the later rounds?
Yeah, that's the thing I have to keep reminding myself of. Obviously, when we think seventh round pick, we think, well, this guy's probably going to need some time. You don't really want him making an impact right away. But we know the tape was better than seventh round by far. I think, again, late day two type of tape this guy had. And so while there's going to be, you know, guys in front of him and Peterson, Wallace, and Porter to before Trice could play, you know, this guy has talent where he could play earlier than most seventh round picks because he's not your typical seventh round selection. I saw a comparison, and at first I kind of bristled at it, but the more I thought about it, the more I can understand it. We wrote about this the other day about a comp between Trice and Cortez Allen. And at first I thought, how good was really Cortez Allen? Is that the guy that you want to be? But, you know, Allen was sometimes used as that sort of tight end matchup on Gronk and trying to be that tight end, not a racer necessarily, but just that answer to it. And Trice, while I don't think he's really a true slot corner, I think he can play on tight ends on third down against Mark Andrews, for example, or against, you know, whatever the great tight ends that you're going to see that have become so commonplace in this league. So I think what Trice can do with that length, that size, that physicality against some tight ends on third down in your dime package could be something to look for, you know, maybe later in the season, right, but certainly in 2024.
Right. And look, I mean, if he comes out to shoot healthy from OTAs and on and stays on, you know, the worst thing about this time of year is you hate to hear about any of these guys and getting on into training camp about any of them missing any time, right? Because it's so important about learning the system and being available. How many times have we come out of draft and, you know, think maybe this guy will get on the field early and all, then he ends up, you know, for whatever reason, soft tissue. I think that even happened with Cortez, didn't it?
I'm sure. Did I have to go back and check? But
was
probably
it him or Curtis Brown? It's been so long ago, but it seems like, and it might have even been both. Guys.
I know Brown, I think, had a hamstring issue at one point.
Right. But, and it seems like maybe Cortez did. I'll have to go back. It's been too long, but seemed like a couple of those guys missed some time, you know, from rookie mini camp on into training camp or whatnot that you know, end up set them behind the eight ball, you know, right to start with. So I think it's imperative that these guys stay healthy throughout the off season. And if they do that, then, you know, we'll see what happens. See about maybe getting them on the field sooner rather than later.
Last thing from Whitehall, he talked about Broderick Jones, obviously excited about the pick, called it a brilliant move from Omar Khan. Maybe a little strong there, but fair enough. I will take it. He talked about, though, with Jones, how he can open up the Steelers offense. What do you think that means? What do you think Jones could do whenever he does play that could open up this offense?
I think you can get him out on the edge.
You're thinking like toss game? You're thinking screen game? All of it.
Okay. You saw what they can do at Georgia with some of those quick wide receiver screens or some of those tosses, especially when they would have Darnell Washington out there as well too. I mean, those guys can get out in space. I envision them, you know, obviously coming out of the shoot and trying to run the football and running it off and forcing teams really to on defensive side of football. At least my hope is that they come into games knowing that they're not going to be able to play too high, you know?
Mm.
So within that, it would open up some of the passing game down the field for Kenny Pickett and company, you know, as a result of teams just saying, look, man, this team's going to come out and try to run the ball against us in any way possible. And that means pass plays, which are essentially elongated run games, right? you know,
right.
You know, the quick passes, the screen games, the tosses, the, you know, I don't think the jet sweep, you know, unfortunately for some listeners isn't going to go away. But if you, how many times do we see though them try to do that, you know, last year specifically and one guy, whether it be Gentry or Dan Moore, Chukwuma Okorafor, just not getting out there to make that one key block.
Sure. All the time. Yeah. And I think, you know, what Jones can do pulling, they didn't pull the tackles too much last year. You might be able to do more of that. Some of those dart concepts with Jones. I can't wait for the first tight end screen with Jones out in front of Darnell Washington. I just want to see that. That's going to be, I think, a lot of fun to go out there and see some of the misdirection that you can do to get those guys open in space and the throwback screen type stuff. So yeah, I think in terms of the screen game, which has been such a pain point for Pittsburgh for years now, when it comes to the tight end running back screen game, hopefully can be better with a guy like Broderick Jones out in space.
You know, and I'm trying to go back through my head. I mean, probably five or six instances right off the top of my head. Can I remember last year, man, this elongated run game, meaning, you know, quick pass or whatnot, that could have busted for, you know, for an explosive play had they got this one block, mm-hmm. you know, and how, you know, and it is all about that too. You know, so if things are blocked up perfectly, on plays, a lot of them are designed to go 20 yards, right?
Yeah, you don't design, you know, plays where you get 3 yards if it all goes perfect. So obviously,
a seal here. I want to see a lot of that, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of alleys they get created right off those seals. And yeah, I mean, everything looks good on the whiteboard until they get it out on the field and you need the guys that can actually execute that. So, yeah, I think that was an interesting comment there. I want to see how that manifests itself in this Canada-based offense. But certainly to get that really hyper-athletic left tackle is something Pittsburgh's not had in quite some time.
If we get to week one, is it disappointing if Broderick's not the week one left tackle?
To a degree, because you always want your first round guys to be on the field, you know, right away. But I also understand this guy's pretty raw and there's going to be work in his game. It's not always going to look as pretty. And there's going to be probably some days in camp or a preseason game where you sit there and say, yeah, man, this guy, you know, he looks a little bit rougher than we thought. And I think Dan Moore is going to present a good challenge being a veteran guy that's played all, 33 games the last two seasons or 34, whatever it is. And so I don't want to assume that Jones will just waltz in and be handed anything. But obviously, you know, with that skill set that Jones has, you want to see this guy out there sooner than later.
Who got you more fired up these last several days, Khan or Weidel?
I think Weidel, just when you say yeah, we want to impose our will. I mean, Khan's
breaking swords, baby.
Breaking swords. Yeah, I'm not even sure what that means, but I'll take it. I mean, it just all sounds good on a bumper sticker.
It sounds medieval, doesn't it? I like that. Yeah.
It really does. So I think Weidel, but yeah, you know, it's all exciting and obviously get him on the field and you really just can't wait to see these guys in action, which will start this weekend.
All right.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
One other quick note here. Speaking of this weekend, the Steelers minicamp tryout list has grown a little bit. Still don't know the full list. It's probably going to be 10 or 15 names that appear this weekend that we're not currently aware of. I think the most interesting name that will be in minicamp this weekend on a tryout basis is Gabe Oladipo from Texas Tech, a defensive lineman. And on the surface, okay, defensive lineman from Texas Tech. What's so special about that? This guy has not played in a game since high school. He was a track and field guy in disc throwing. And I think some of the other, you know, throwing, I'm not too knowledgeable here about this too much, but weight throwing competitions. And he was doing that at Texas Tech until 2022, then went back out for the football team, was on the team, but only practiced all year, never actually appeared in a game. So really interesting story here. Gabe Oladipo, really strong. I think he benched 29 at his pro day, had good testing, ran a sub 5 second 40. So he's a good athlete, obviously, with I'm looking at his photo, just like a massive, you know, upper half with all the throwing that he's done. But one of the more interesting names, a guy that's not really has not played in a game since high school, will be in a NFL rookie minicamp this weekend.
A guy that would probably do good in the Kizora toss, right?
I think he has the record there. Yeah, it's him, and then the freshman year bully, I think, is in second place in the Kizora toss. So yeah, there you go.
I would. That's interesting. I would look at this as the old no stone left unturned category. Height, weight, speed. You know, you want a chance to play football and let us get a look at you. Come on in.
Yeah, really interesting there. So obviously the odds of him making it are probably going to be, you know, slim, like most of these Trout guys. But I thought a really interesting story there. And yeah, he's listed 6'2", 295. So there's some size and some strength. And I know some people in the comments mentioned about what Carlton Haisling, who was a wrestler, and obviously Villanueva had a, you know, kind of crazy path to the NFL. So you never count these guys out. But I think Oladipo, somebody will do a story on him, I probably imagine, to learn more about his path, mm-hmm. because it's a pretty interesting one.
You never know. You and that's why they're invites, right?
Yep, exactly. So anyway, moving on here, Dave. This morning for Steelers Depot, I did my way too early 2023 Pittsburgh Steelers roster prediction. And so we can go through that. And I want to get your thoughts on some of the names that I have and some of the names that I don't have on this roster prediction. So we'll start with quarterback. I have three of them, kind of. I have Pickett, Trubisky, of course, and then a placeholder as a number three quarterback, because you cannot make me put Tanner Morgan on this list, and he's the only quarterback on this team as of right now.
All right. Well, and because that, I mean, there's so much unknown there, right?
With Morgan, yeah, I just don't think that the tape would justify a spot. If this was 2019, he was viewed as a top college quarterback. His career kind of fell apart, had a bunch of concussions, and so they're going to have to have a fourth quarterback on this roster at some point. I don't know if that'll be a veteran or not. But if this team's going to stay with its historical trends of keeping three quarterbacks, I don't think Morgan's that guy. Now, I think one interesting argument you could make, do they keep two? This is finally the year that they keep two, just simply because they don't really have a third guy to justify the spot. But as of right now, I'll assume they find a third quarterback, a veteran type, at some point before week one.
And you threw out the idea in a post over the weekend on Nick Foles, right?
Yeah, they actually got better reception than I thought, because I know Foles was really terrible last season and he's like kind of bordering on retiring at this point. But because he has an Andy Weidel connection, which has kind of been the theme of the offseason with some of the offensive linemen that have been brought in, Foles was out there in Philadelphia when Weidel was there in 2016, 2017, where, of course, Foles replaces Carson Wentz. They go on this great Super Bowl run. They win a Super Bowl. Those things certainly stick well with you. And, you know, Foles could be a number three, a mentor type. And just kind of almost be a coach, almost be like a Josh Dobbs type of guy. So I could see, not that you ever want to see Foles in the game, but I think if you're looking for that number three veteran quarterback, that'll be cheap and probably want to come to Pittsburgh, good culture, chance to win, play for Mike Tomlin, reunite with Andy Weidel. I think Foles is a guy that you could convince to, hey, come in for one last season and let's just kind of give it one last ride.
When do you remember the last time this team did not take four quarterbacks to training camp?
Board a camp, I mean, I have to think they've done it basically every single year. I'd have to try to go back and find old training camp rosters, and some of those can be tougher to do the further that you go back. But I think most teams carry four, and Pittsburgh basically always has.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So there, you know, we'll have to see what, and you know, one of the other things about, you know, especially when it comes to Khan, in some of these post-draft interviews, is, you know, he reiterated that, you know, they're at what, 87? What did we say, 87 right now?
Yeah, on the roster.
Under contract. And then, you know, we think that a couple of these XFL guys are going to be signed. Chidi and Hakeem Butler, we like the chances of that. That still leaves you one spot somewhere, and there's going to be a lot of roster manipulation here, you know, by the time, even, you know, from now until the team even gets to OTAs, and then even past OTAs, you're going to see some flipping going on. So it'll be interesting to see who If indeed they bring in a fourth quarterback, which we like the chances of that, and who that quarterback is.
Yeah, there's going to be a fourth quarterback this weekend, and Hunter Johnson, who we mentioned, I believe, last week, the former five-star recruit out of high school that did not have a good college career, went to Clemson, then Northwestern, then back to Clemson, threw six passes last year. So he's an option to be signed, but obviously not somebody that I would consider putting on a 53-man roster right now.
Yeah, and I understand, I guess where I'm getting going here is I understand why you kind of left that a quarterback to be named later.
Yeah, I don't like doing it that often, but I just really could not justify putting Tanner Morgan there. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he has a tremendous training camp and becomes the talk of the town, and I'm all for that. But for now, just a placeholder. At running back, keeping three as well with Najee Harris, Jaylen Warren, and this number three spot's pretty wide open like quarterback, but I'm going with a name here, Master Teague. I'm with you, Dave. I thought Teague turned heads last year before that ankle injury. He ran hard, had success in a preseason game. If he can show some special teams value, he's got a shot to make this team.
I think the fact that, you know, he you know, according to you, he came out and had a good couple of days of camp and then obviously got hurt and had, you know, rarely do you see these bottom of the, especially at the running back position, bottom of the depth chart guys that get hurt like he did. And, you know, and in other words, they don't usually circle back.
Right.
And he did. And I think, and then there's no, you know, Benny Snell obviously hasn't circled back and is looking less and less likely that will happen. And I just, from the optics look of things right now, I think you have to give some credence to the idea that Master Teague's got their attention and they would like to see him make another run at this, you know, obviously through the offseason here. And if he can stay healthy, you know, I like his chances as much as the next guy in here. So I find no fault with you and your way too early prediction of having him as the number three.
He's got size, he's got power, and those are basically the two things that Pittsburgh looks for in a running back. And they just love the big type of running backs. Those are the guys that have always worked well. The smaller types like McFarland's of the world, the Rainies, the Archers have never panned out in Pittsburgh. And Teague is like rocked up. I mean, he just looks unbelievable. So, yeah, I'll go with Teague for now. And maybe this team adds a veteran. I don't know. But that's who I'm going with right now in Master Teague. So, at fullback, I'm putting a fullback here in Connor Haywood. I do believe he'll play more of a fullback role this year. Matt Canada seemed to kind of hint this much over draft weekend and kind of be that H-back still that can, you know, catch passes in the flat off of boots, off of play action, can kind of be, I don't know what you want to call him, not a John L. Williams of the 90s, but sort of like that, I suppose, and somebody that can...
A factor a back.
Maybe not factor back, not all Merrill Hodge on me, but somebody that can, you know, be more than a lead blocker, but also probably do some of that as well.
I think the biggest thing that I'm interested to learn, maybe depending on how they use him, is when it comes to Connor Haywood, is how he functions as a lead fullback blocker.
Yeah, because he's not the biggest guy and like the strongest guy, but we know that obviously him as an inline tight end is not going to be where he's going to win either. Now they're doing some of the off-ball stuff last year, some of the split flow type concepts, and he got better at that. They were cutting because to start last year, they were just having him like stay on his feet to block these guys on split zones, which is not going to work well, but he was cutting later in the year and that became more effective. So obviously him as a blocker is still a bit of a tricky point, but I kind of like him better as that lead blocker than, you know, him obviously being an inline Y tight end.
How much consideration did you give to Monty the Mullet?
You want to, it'd be fun, but I think he'll have a couple of good moments in camp. But I think, again, in this Canada offense, where you want these fullbacks to impact the pass game as well, you know, Potterbaum's not going to offer you really probably anything there.
And obviously this plays on into the tight end position, which you decided to keep there. You have Freiermuth, Darnell Washington, and Zach Gentry there. Freiermuth's obviously set in stone. Darnell Washington's set in stone to make the roster. You've got to like Connor Hayward's chances of making a roster in some way, shape, or form there. I guess where the thing to watch is once again Connor Hayward, how much is he actually used as the true fullback? How he functions there? Could they potentially, and you know, you got a guy like Monty. How do you pronounce his last name?
Yeah, I just say, I think Potterbaum.
Okay, Potterbaum. Can that guy make any noise? In other words, can you get to a place where, you know, maybe Monty can be your fullback special teams guy, and then you wind up carrying Freiermuth, Washington, and Connor Hayward, with Connor kind of being that quasi, you know, he can fill both roles.
Actually, I think Potterbaum's pronunciation is just loud tractor noises. I think that's how you say it. It's like a Key and Peele sketch. You just have some heavy machinery as your sound. It's probably like your throwback Iowa kid. That's how you pronounce
or,
his last
or
name.
Or as John Madden would say, boom.
Yeah, you just say boom. Monty boom. That's just what you do the entire time. Yeah, I mean, what I want here, you know, keeping you could put Hayward as a tight end in that bucket, and that's fine. I don't really care. I think he's going to be used in a variety of ways, not just as a tight end, not just as a fullback. But, you know, you're going to keep four tight ends slash fullbacks, which is what you had last year with Derek Watt, and then Hayward, Freiermuth, and Gentry. Gentry may not even be active on game day, but if you want to be the bully ball type of team with the big people up front, then you're going to keep Gentry. And if you don't keep Gentry and you're going to keep four of the fullbacks slash tight ends, then who else are you going to put on there? You could put Monty, I guess. There's Rodney Williams, who's really more of a wide receiver type of tight end than a blocker. So that's why I went, you know, with Washington and Gentry.
All right, I got you. All right, wide receivers. Interesting.
Yep, the six here, Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, Allen Robinson, Calvin Austin III, Miles Boykin, and Anthony Miller. Miller was my 53rd and final player to put on this list. I think the top five I mentioned are pretty set in stone in terms of making this team. Even Boykin, just because of this, the, I think, clear special teams value that he's going to offer. Miller, there's some versatility there. If he can stay healthy, I think he'll make some plays. Another veteran type of guy in that room, but Miller was the guy that, you know, you could probably sub out for somebody else.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I would think, and it'd be interesting, you know, to earmark this and come back to it later. But I'm with you to the fact that it feels as long as these, and it's a, once again, these things have a way of working themselves out, unfortunately. But assuming all these guys stay healthy, I would at least pencil in Johnson, George Pickens, Allen Robinson, Calvin Austin III, and Miles Boykin. And Miles Boykin primarily because he's such a damn good gunner, special teams player. Mm-hmm. Then it becomes a question of A, do you keep six in total? And B, who is that sixth?
Yeah, and obviously there's other names competing. Gunnar Olszewski, can't forget about him. Dan Chiesa, I think, could be a really quality special teamer, but I think Boykin's return is going to, you know, certainly hurt Chiesa's odds of making the team. So those are other names to be in consideration. And of course,
Cody White's one that's hung around a little while too. You know,
he just feels like, you know, a 4A type player where he's never really going to make an impact in the NFL, just like a practice squatter that can wear different hats, help you out on teams a little bit, but never really, you know, slam dunk 53-man roster type. But yeah, he's there as well.
All right, you have eight offensive linemen in total.
I do. I'll rattle them off here. Broderick Jones, Stan Moore, Chuck Wilmer-Core for a tackle, Isaac Seumalo, James Daniels, Nate Herbig at guard, and Mason Cole and Ryan McCollum at center. So notable names not on here. Probably a good place to start that. Laraven Clark, Kendrick Green, Kevin Dotson. I have Dotson. I'll assume he gets traded at some point in late camp for a, you know, day three, fifth or sixth round pick in 2024. Kendrick Green, obviously on his way out. I'll say that, you know, Clark doesn't make it because you draft Broderick Jones. And I think McCollum, interesting guy that we should talk about more. He's got some NFL experience. He's played center. He's played guard. He has length. He has size. I could see McCollum with a full year in Pittsburgh kind of having a pretty good training camp.
All right. If you were to keep one more,
I mean, obviously, if you told me that they couldn't trade Dotson, do you still keep him? I guess, but is he like next man up? I mean, Herbig would be next man up. So I'm not even sure what Dotson would do if you kept him, unless you just like extreme depth, that there were a ton of injuries. There is Spencer Anderson. Right. I'd probably go Spencer Anderson as that versatile guy that can kind of play everywhere. So I guess him. But I wanted at least one draft pick to not make it, just so it didn't feel like every single draft pick makes it, because typically not all of them do.
Right. That's where my mind wandered to is, and it'll be interesting, A, to see starting with this rookie mini camp, you know, where Anderson starts off at, and then on top of that, You know, do they move him up and down? You know, will he be advanced enough to right out of the chute and on into OTAs, move around quite a bit? And then obviously, how does he play?
Yeah, I think they will, you know, if you're drafting him to be versatile, start that versatility immediately. I know there's some inkling to let's get him in the one position before we start overwhelming him with different positions and techniques and, you know, coaching points. But I mean, he's probably a pretty smart guy to play all five spots. So I want him to start showing that versatility sooner than later.
It's rude to say this because you hate to say that you're rooting against any one particular guy. But when it comes to LaRaven Clark, that's a Trent Scott guy. I mean, hopefully they can get around having to keep LaRaven Clark.
Yeah, at this point, he's now your number four tackle. I mean, obviously, you know, whoever is not your starter between Jones and Moore becomes your swing guy. And so, you know, Clark could try to bring value as a tackle eligible, which is what Scott did last year. Clark did some in Tennessee this year, but you could put Moore or Jones out there to be that guy, and that would be just fine.
All right. True or false? They won't keep as many as 10 offensive linemen. The number will be 8 or 9.
True, 8 or 9.
Right.
Have they even kept 10? Was the last time they kept 10? That feels pretty heavy.
It feels long. Feels like it has happened, but I don't know if it was IR related. You know, who knows? You know, sometimes this thing can, someone has to start off with a ding or something like that.
Do you have any thoughts on McCollum? I think that's kind of one of those sleeper names we don't talk about too much right now.
Well, we just haven't seen him play, you know?
In the preseason last year.
Yeah.
Got some decent tape.
All right. I mean, if there's one position, I think, depth wise where they could use a veteran, it would be backup center. And I think I've kind of, I wrote about that recently as well, too. Sure. You look at all the guys in the room right now, does anybody really step out head and shoulders to be the backup to Mason Cole?
I do think if there's one critique in my roster, only going 8 offensive linemen might feel a little bit light. You might go 9, so you might, you know, swap out Miller for Anderson or somebody else on there. But of course, you have practice squad where you could, you know, call somebody up, elevate somebody if you had to, whenever injuries strike.
Okay.
All right, defensively, with my defensive line, keeping the typical 6 of Cam Hayward, Larry Ogunjobi, I'll call DeMarvin Leal at defensive end for now, and then a nose tackle, Keanu Benton, Armin Watts, and Braden Fehoko. So keeping both Watts and Fehoko, which means that no Isaiah Loudermilk, no Montrevious Adams. And again, I think that roster turnover will continue as Omar Khan really builds this roster and this team in his vision. So some shaking up there along the D-line.
Yeah, quite a bit. 3 new names in here, and Benton, Watts, and Fehoko. And then we're still wondering what's going to happen with Leal.
I think he is too. He's probably wondering what Pittsburgh's going to do with him. Yeah, I know. I didn't necessarily expect to keep both Watts and Fehoko initially, but when I kind of sat down and thought about it, with Montrevious Adams, this team brought in 3 nose tackles over the last month, basically, you know, 6 weeks. What does that say about Montrevious Adams when they're bringing in 3 nose tackles behind you? Mm-hmm. Probably doesn't say anything that good, and you save a little bit of salary at least by dumping him.
All right, I get it.
So that's the name. Same. Then Loudermilk is a guy that I think is very much on the bubble, probably even like outside looking in maybe right now, because the pass rush has never been there and the run defense has frankly not been that good either.
Okay. All right. Edge.
At edge rusher, your favorite position, keeping 5, TJ Watt, Alex Highsmith. I'll call Nick Herbig an edge because I guess it's going to at least be partially his role. Quincy Roche and David Perales, putting a UDFA on there from Fresno State. There's always like one undrafted pass rusher that has a great camp in Pittsburgh, whether it's Ola Adeniyi, Tuzar Skipper, Jameer Jones. And I'll say Perales, who made a ton of splash plays in college, just lacks some size, is going to be the next in that line of names.
All right. We'll play this into, because we're trying to mix in guys that they might add to the roster moving forward here. And PFF had a interesting kind of, I guess, dart throw, if you will, of they went around the league and got, you know, guys still unsigned who would fit different places there. And they had, I thought it was a pretty deep. And I say this because I thought Kyle Van Noy made more than he made last year, but he made, you know, under, I think, $2.5 million last year with the Chargers. And you go back and you look at what, even though he's on up there in age, what, 32, I think, or right around in there, and you look what this guy's been able to do the last, I think, five seasons alone, and you know, playing around, I think, a minimum of like 700 defensive snaps over the course of the last five seasons. And I think he's averaged 5.25 sacks over the last five seasons on top of it. I mean, obviously, Father Time is neck and neck with him at this point. But I mean, when you go back and you look at what he did last year with the Chargers, and at the point of his career, I mean, you know, what is he worth right now? They could easily afford Kyle Van Noy at the salary he made last year, even slightly higher, if it got up to, like, let's say $2.5 million with him. He's got some versatility, a little bit of versatility to him too. Long story short, would that be an awful ad at $2.5 million of Kyle Van Noy?
No, I don't think it would be. And I'm just looking at his numbers. I think, you know, what did you say the average was? Like 5.25
sacks, I think, over the course. I think I wrote over the course of the last 5 years. And I think he's averaged a minimum of 700 and something defensive snaps played. Now, I don't think you want to get in a situation where you have to play him 700 and something snaps. Yeah. But, you know, if you could keep that number around 400, 450, I think would be more ideal, because that would have mean, you know, and let's assume that injuries don't happen ahead of them. That means you're getting guys like Watt and Highsmith a little bit of rest along the way there. And, you know, I think with his experience, he'd fit in good. And then, you know, it prevents you from having to rush Herb, you know, assuming that maybe you're headstrong that Herbig's going to be an edge. All right. Mm-hmm. And you want him to kind of, because even Weidel says, you know, we think he's going to get bigger naturally. Well, that's not going to happen unless he gets down to Primanti Brothers.
Is he going to get longer? I think the length that people keep ignoring the length is, right, our biggest issue with Nick Herbig.
Right. That, and, you know, I think Herbig can maybe get a little bigger from a frame standpoint? Yeah, I think that's possible. But once again, he's not going to get longer unless you really want to go medieval this offseason, put him on a rack.
That does exist, apparently. I was reading about this, like, there's some guy, because I'm a short king myself, and I was like, I'm just looking at this story. This guy got, like, metal rods put in his legs to make himself 3 inches taller, which just seems like an insane thing to do. That's totally not worth it. But we could do that with Nick Herbig, I suppose.
You know, and let's face it, Roche, I mean, what is he in Paralysis? Even, you know, he's got a little bit of length issues to him too. And, sure, you know, not the quickest guy off the ball, and obviously a rookie and going to just be fighting to probably even make the practice squad. So I guess where I'm going with this is, I will, you know, mark this down on the tape right here so you can go back to it only if I'm right. I like the chance of this team still adding an experienced edge.
Yeah, they've been doing that, and I would totally understand why they would do that. With Van Noy, not even just the average of the sack totals, but over the last four seasons, the consistency of it, like the median of it, 6.5, 6, 5, and 5 sacks, mm-hmm, over his last four. So it's been just like consistent, steady production, even as he's gotten older and changed teams and been in different systems. That, I think, is really interesting with Van Noy. So yeah, I'd be open to that, but, you know, on the other hand, just by devil's advocate, this team may say that we got a bunch of young guys that are hungry, that are going to compete with Herbig and Roche and Rallis and whoever else is in that mix. And we're going to let those guys compete and see what we have with this current group before we think about some of the outside additions.
As it sits right now, would you like to see a veteran added to this group?
Yes, especially if Liao's plan is to play more true D-line.
Right. And see, that's another part of this equation we're waiting to find out too, is what's going to happen. What room or rooms is Liao going to be in? You know?
Yeah. I know we sound like broken records talking about that the entire offseason,
but we don't know.
It's a really important question.
And we're not going to pretend like we know what directions he's going to go in.
And that answer would tell us a lot about how this roster may or may not look. So that's why it's something we talk about, you know, so often.
All right. Inside.
When you look at it, it looks a little thinner than you kind of realize, but the four I'm keeping here are Cole Holcomb, Mark Robinson, Alandon Roberts, and Tanner Muse. Muse primarily for special teams. That's it. That's the group right now. I think Herbig could play some off ball, and I noted on here that I think Robinson will be the week one starter. I know Roberts was signed, and he had the 2-year deal with, you know, not for a ton of money, but more than what Robinson is making. But I'm going to I'll bet you a dollar that Robinson is the week one starter.
Okay, I'll take that bet. Just okay. To be on the other side. I understand right. The reason behind it. It wouldn't hurt my feelings to see him progress like that to earn that role.
Yeah, but they're pretty similar players, Robinson and Roberts. Their makeup, their builds are pretty close to identical. At cornerback, some more changes here with Patrick Peterson, Levi Wallace, Joey Porter Jr., Corey Trice Jr., Arthur Millett, and Chandon Sullivan. So no James Pierre, no Akella Witherspoon. Those are the six that I'm keeping. Your thoughts, Dave?
Yeah, it feels like you could use that slot, you know, a better slot to go in there as a backup.
Yeah, I mean, again, we talked about that so much in terms of who that guy's going to be. But basically, my thought was Peterson, Wallace, Porter Jr., and Trice Jr. are your outside guys. Millett, Sullivan, more of your inside slot guys. Obviously, they may move Peterson around a bit, and these guys aren't necessarily going to be static, but that's kind of the way I broke up the room.
No James Pierre in there for special teams, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I've always wanted to like Pierre's game, and he's been, I think, a fine special teams guy. But at some point, he's got to prove that he can be a real consistent cover guy, and he's never been that type. So obviously, you know, he'll battle Trice. It may come down to like a two dogs one bone situation between Corey Trice Jr. and James Pierre.
Yeah, I would have to think that Danny Smith will have some little bit of say in one of those spots there. So, and I would like to think that James Pierre, probably the leader in the clubhouse when it comes to guys Danny Smith likes.
Yeah, that's a fair point. So we'll get in the camp and see how those guys look. And at safety, 5 with Minkah Fitzpatrick, DeMonte Casey, Keanu Neal, Miles Killebrew, and I'm keeping Trey Norwood. So 11 DBs, pretty heavy there. Norwood, to me, very much on the bubble after a disappointing sophomore season, but because there's versatility, because of the slot concerns, Norwood, in theory, on paper, should be a better, you know, slot coverage guy on third down, so he makes it as well.
And Miles Killebrew lasts one more year, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, Pittsburgh loves to keep, you know, 2 or 3 core special teams guys, and Killebrew still is that guy.
All right, specialist.
Yeah, rattle them off here. Chris Boswell at kicker, Braden Mann at punter, beating out Presley Harvin III, and Christian Kuntz at long snapper.
All right, at least you should have a pretty decent battle at punter there, right?
Yeah, that'll be fun. I think last year they kind of sat there. They really brought in no competition for Harvin at all. They cut their punter early in camp, basically trying to put this full vote of confidence in Harvin. Okay, you're our guy. Don't even think about competition. Just be the best player that you can be. Harvin was better last year, but not that much better. Man has a big leg like Harvin. I think he's had more productivity at the NFL level. If his hang times can be consistent, then he'll be an option. And Man can do kickoffs as well. And that may give Chris Boswell's leg, as he gets older, a bit of a break.
All right. I like the reasoning there. How many of these 53 do you think you're going to hit? 47?
As of right now, yeah. I mean, because like this 47 are almost, you can't even debate, you know, unless there's an injury that occurs or something. So that's probably an easy answer to give. But just something to do here on a May, sure. And then, you know, I'll have another one right before training camp. And of course, they become more meaningful, more interesting once camp begins.
All right. I might try something similar here in the next week.
Yeah. Looking forward to that. Anything else, Dave, you want to talk about? I think those were all the things that we wanted to basically hit on.
Trying to think, did we miss anything we wanted to hit on?
No, I think we're going to try to do a draft roundtable Wednesday. No guarantee, but we might try to put something together, probably do a couple of those versions throughout the off season. But hopefully we'll have something different for you guys this Wednesday.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
All right. And if you submitted an entry into the draft contest, I finally, we had so many entries to that thing, and and they come in all different various ways, some in Excel format, some in Word, some in PDF, some in just just in an email body. And it made for quite a job for David O to have to go through. But I think he's doubled and triple checked everything. So look for a post maybe later on this evening with the initial, what we think is the top three in this. And obviously, if you find issue, we will give like a 24-hour grace period to say, hey, you missed me here. I think my score was better than this, because with so many entries, I got to find a better way to do, we have so many entries with this. I got to find an easier way for these entries to come in, and more importantly, to get scored, because that's it's taken quite a while to go through all these for David O. So hope to have those results up on the site later on tonight here for people to go through and question and contest if they feel they were wrong here.
All right.
With that, you want to get to some emails?
Yep, let's get to some reader emails and close out today's show.
All right. Mark Miller writes in, cap help. Now that we are past the draft, Dave, could you give a brief explanation of what is the benefit to a player for agreeing to a contract restructure, and are there any negative aspects for them? More importantly, what is the negative side to the team? He says, I see teams like the Browns giving a massive contract to Watson, and before they suffer from the cap hit, they just restructure. I know the cap is fluid, but it seems like they can just continue to kick the can down the road without any consequences. I know you talked about this in the past, but I just don't understand. Now the Ravens have done the same, and the Bengals are next. He says, I want to see them all have to make sacrifices for these contract decisions. Please tell me it's coming, he says. I'll just start back. Remember back when the Steelers had Ben Roethlisberger under those franchise quarterback numbers, and how they had to keep restructuring him. And it's really not any different. As far as the negatives to a contract restructure, first you got to look at the positives of it. The positive is you get the instant cap relief in that initial year. The negatives related to it are obviously you are kicking, so to speak, the can down the road. But within that, as far as a negative related to a player, I mean, I suppose, and I don't know all the tax laws and all like that, but I mean, I wouldn't think that they're significant. If anything, if I'm a player and I get my contract restructure, it kind of ties me to the team a little bit, at least, for the next year. It makes me a little bit harder to cut in let's say the next 2 years, because you don't want to have the can kicked and the player not standing beside the can, if that makes sense there.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I mean, you're already talking about, as part of restructure, you're talking about money a player was already going to get in that initial year anyway, and he's still getting that money. It's just how it's allocated from a cap standpoint there. The real negatives to obviously doing this, what it could become a negative, especially when you're dealing with the higher end players here, is you hope that the player stays healthy and productive, and he can continue to stand alongside the can, if you will. Where you get into trouble is when you're dealing with situations where, I don't know, let's go back a couple of years ago with, I don't know, Willie Colon, and I mean, even Stephon Tuitt most recently, where you restructure the contract and then you end up having, for whatever reason, to part ways with the player there. The same obviously goes with a quarterback. You're betting that, you'll at least make it to the balloon note the final year of that, where you can make a decision to get out from underneath of it, especially when you're dealing with some of these guaranteed, look at Lamar Jackson's contract that ended up being, once again, a series of option years that are guaranteed along in there. So, the negative with this, because, you do have cap escalation as well, too, what you think the cap's going to go up to help offset, some of this kicking the can down the road and all like that. I mean, the real negative here is that it's a gamble that the player's going to be healthy and worthy of the money once you do the restructure with him here. So, look, you could see this coming, and I understand people saying, you know, Steeler fans wanting to root against these things going wrong for other teams, but weren't they rooting against this, it to go wrong with Ben Roethlisberger, you know, to some degree?
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to think back to then. Obviously, there's a lot of layers with all of this stuff that you're trying to obviously explain right now.
Look, it makes it hyper when you have multiple high dollar guys on your roster and you're having to restructure a couple of them and all. In my mind, it really makes it, especially when you're dealing with a franchise quarterback here, it makes it imperative that you really do good in the drafts, especially with your first three or four picks, right? You really want to hit on these guys because obviously with their rookie contracts, you don't have to worry about A, replacing those guys, and B, replacing those guys with you know, guys that make more money, you know, on top of it there. So it is a big, hopefully I explained that a little bit more than briefly, but you know, negative side for the player, I don't see a big negative at all, unless, you know, something related to taxes or something like that for a player to actually restructure. And when it comes to the team, you know, you're betting that he's going to be able to be there standing next to his can.
Standing, I like the phrasing there. Yeah, I'm with you overall. I don't really have a whole lot more to add, but I think you explained it well.
Let's see here.
Hey, so real quick, somebody just asked, and this is a very random, and I'm not trying to tease anything here, but somebody had asked me, hypothetically, if Stephon Tuitt were to unretire and like want to come back and play football again, what would be any sort of like salary cap implications for that? Does that change anything on Pittsburgh's end?
Well, they've already let's see, where's the dead money sit with him right now?
I mean, I guess his contract, I guess, is just like tolling in terms of the base salary, right? So it would just
I would think it would toll. I think this is the final year that they're eating $4.755 million in dead money, and that does not become undead either. Right. So the $4.755 million in 2023 would stay. I would imagine that there, you know, you would be dealing with a toll aspect of the of the contract year from where he left off at there.
So 2022 base salary, right? I guess it would be.
Is that when retired? Yeah, and I would have to I'm gonna have to look on the sheet of if he even has officially. Do we remember if he officially retired or not? I can't remember.
I don't know if he filed the paperwork or not. I'd have to go back. I imagine that he did. I guess he didn't have, there's nothing that says he has to, but I guess if you want to start potentially getting a pension and all those benefits, I think you have to submit your paperwork, and then it's X amount of time after that paperwork has been filed. So I don't know for sure on that. I know it's a very random thing. Just, I had a Twitter follower ask me that. I did not really have a good answer other than to say that Pittsburgh still retains his rights. Of course, if he did want to unretire, he's not a free agent. But I didn't know how that might work from a salary cap implication standpoint. If, and again, there's no evidence that Tuitt wants to do this. It's just somebody just asking me as a hypothetical out of the blue. But I thought it was an interesting question I wanted to get your thoughts on briefly.
All right. Here's the last transaction with him. And it happened on August. This is according to the NFL database here. I believe the last transaction with him was on June the 2nd. Remember that they had to wait to get past, I think, the whole June 1st thing here. Mm-hmm. It was him being placed on the reserve retired list.
So he did file his paperwork.
I mean,
does that mean that?
I don't know if that's the same as officially retiring, just that he's been placed on the reserve retired list. So
okay.
He's on a list, so he would have to be removed from the reserve. In other words, they own his rights right now.
Sure.
Still. So sure. No other team can come in and say, Hey, Stephon, you want to come out, you know, you want to play for us, because they, then you'd have the whole tampering.
Right. And Jim Irsay will tweet at you about it. I think that's what happens there.
So I think he would have to, A, be removed from the reserve retired list. And then I would imagine it would toll back to his last year.
Okay. And then you have to figure out if you can handle that, you know,
right,
contractually. And I imagine whatever his base salary was a fairly large number. I don't know the exact number, but
wasn't it around 11 million or so, something like that?
Probably. So
I can't remember.
I wonder how that, I mean, you sit there and how do you handle that as a team? You sit there and say, well, we didn't really account for this to it. I wonder how you handle that as an organization.
Well, you'd either have to, if he was dead set on making that kind of money, then you'd probably have to think about restructuring it. They're not going to, I would think that they wouldn't do that, you know?
Right. Anyway, I don't mean to take it down the rabbit hole. Yeah. Just wanted to answer that thought.
I mean, it's a good question, I suppose, for the old hypothetical crew and all like that. But I would imagine it would toll because the contract's still technically intact. He hasn't been cut, you know?
Right. Yeah, I knew it would toll. I just didn't know how the salary aspect. You just, okay, well, it's back on your cap. If you want to bring him back, I guess you have to figure it out from there.
Right. Now, obviously, you wouldn't have the proration because you already ate the proration.
Yeah, but you'd have the base salary to account for.
Right. Well, within that, I don't think we had a busy week in the email machine here overall. So I think that's a good stopping point for us then.
All right, we'll come back Wednesday, hopefully with some sort of draft roundtable. I'm not entirely sure who it'll be. I know Jonathan Heitschrider is on vacation right now, so he won't be part of this week's roundtable, but I'm sure we'll do, you know, at least one more if we do one at all on Wednesday. So we'll come back and see what we have for you guys.
All right, and let's see. No, last week was a YouTube live stream, so no YouTube live stream, right?
Okay. Correct.
All right. Let's see. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Cazorla. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button upright navigational bar. Also, if you'd like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the ad-free button upright navigational bar. Follow the directions that way. So until Wednesday. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.